The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
What is going on? Episode 42, the Southern Beat, right here on your devices. How's everybody out there doing? How are we feeling after college football week one? Some of us feeling probably pretty damn good. Some of us probably feeling, when's basketball season start? Or, hey, how's that recruiting class for next year looking like right now? I think there's probably all of those things happening, but nonetheless, hopefully you all enjoyed the weekend. This one, as I've mentioned before, just going to be quick recaps. I think about 15, 20 minutes, something like that, to be able to get you caught up on the action and, of course, you know, share some of my thoughts from the weekend and how everything went. But for these games, only going to be looking really at the games that I know that you necessarily care about. And then at the end, do like kind of a quick little recap of, A&M, Sam Houston State, maybe a little bit of Auburn, Mercer, also to the Troy Ole Miss game, Mississippi State getting some revenge on Memphis. I mean, you know, those are the ones that I think were kind of a little bit on the back burner. No disrespect to those programs, but I think that probably people cared a lot more about what was happening in, say, Atlanta with Georgia and Oregon. Or how about last night, Sunday night, with LSU and Florida State? And then Saturday night, along with, kind of going head-to-head with Ohio State, Notre Dame, Billy Napier's very impressive opening game as the Florida Gators head coach. And then also, too, another one, Alabama. Just got to kind of, cover them because they're Alabama and they're the odds-on favorite to win the national title this year. So I got to talk about their 55-0 dismantling of Utah State. But I did want to start first by talking about, what I got to experience this weekend, and that was go up to the Horseshoe in Columbus, Ohio, at Ohio State, and got to see the Ohio State-Notre Dame game, and it was a Saturday night game. It was awesome. I mean, the atmosphere was just electric. It was unreal inside Ohio Stadium, and, it was funny. I was talking with somebody because I said, kind of a lot of the same rhetoric that, I had, Carlos Medina, Matt Chernoff and Brian Hoyt had when we got back from Notre Dame a couple of years ago, where we had said, gosh, just everybody up there was so nice. And it was funny. I mentioned that to my buddy Kevin Noon, who covers Ohio State. And he said, yeah, but, also keep in mind, it was not Michigan. It was not an SEC opponent. It was not anybody that necessarily you have huge hatred for if you're an Ohio State fan. And also, too, with the heavy Catholic presence that's there in the Columbus greater area, but also to Central Ohio, that probably feeds into it as well. And that probably a lot of Ohio State fans are pseudo Notre Dame fans. Just the game itself, I mean, I think you got to be incredibly impressed with how Ohio State played defensively. It seemed like Eichenberg was all over the field for Ohio State. He was unbelievable. And also, too, this is a team that got it done, on the ground, running the football between Mayan Williams and Travion Henderson. And, that's just how they were able to really make things happen. I mean, I know not having Jackson Smith and Jigba kind of hurt Ohio State a little bit, but I think if nothing else, they showed that maybe they might be a physical team after all. And, I think that it also feeds into last year. I mean, what narratives are after the first game of the season, because last year people thought, all right, Georgia, for example, they're going to need to score more points. And eventually they did. They played against a very sound defense that before injuries happened was one of the best in college football in Clemson, and they were able to win that game. So it's the first game. I don't think that you can plan on everything firing on all cylinders, and for Ohio State offensively, not really much rhythm. But I think also, though, too, credit needs to go to Notre Dame. I mean, unlike the way that their old head coach is now at LSU, which we're going to get to in just a second. Unlike how his team looked on Sunday night, You could definitely tell that Marcus Freeman had this team ready to go, and this team was disciplined. They played outstanding, and it was really until the end when Ohio State finally said, we are more athletic than these guys. We're a better football team. Let's just assert our will, and they did. I mean, you had that touchdown pass there at the end of the third quarter, and then I believe it went 80-something or 90-something yards that final drive of the game. I mean, I was there. You know, I should remember it. But, of course, you know, just all things kind of coming at you at once when you're in the building at the same time. And earlier today when I got back from Columbus, I was watching the game. ESPNU was replaying it. So, you know, had a chance to be able to check that out. Kudos to Notre Dame. I mean, I think that if nothing else, Marcus Freeman, if he can get a little bit more offensive production, that probably at the end of the year we are talking about Notre Dame as being one of those teams fighting for one of those four playoff spots, because I do think defensively they are a good football team. Like I said, they were incredibly disciplined, and they probably played about as well as you could, you know, minus the offense really being able to get anything going. But, you know, aside from that, I still think this is a team that's got a lot of upside to this season. So, that is something to keep an eye on for sure. But from there, let's pivot over to talking about the game that was an absolute mess for one side and amazing for the other. We're going to get to Georgia and Oregon in just a second. As a matter of fact, I had them on my sheet of talking about them just after the Ohio State-Notre Dame game. Kind of going a little bit outside of the Southern footprint there for a second. But when you have 2 versus 5, you definitely do need to talk about that. But let's talk about LSU and Florida State. I mean, just a debacle, I don't even think, is how you can start by talking about Brian Kelly's debut at LSU. That was just flat-out embarrassing if you're an LSU fan. I think that, you know, it's something that, you know, a lot of the things, and I don't hide how I feel about LSU. As a matter of fact, I've told you I've got a huge LSU lean. So, you know, it's something that I definitely have a rooting interest in the program. And just watching that last night, I mean, it's one of those things at the end of it. I told a buddy of mine, I said, I can't even be mad. I think I'm more just amazed by the lack of at least the perception of preparation, because there were times offensively that I was like, have they even practiced? Like, it seriously was amazing to me, some of the mistakes that they were making. And then defensively, too, on third downs, missed assignments, blown coverages, all of these different things, which granted do happen in a very first game. But again, it was something like, oh my God, like, how do you not have this ironed out? Like, how have you not practiced this and gone over these situations and what to look for? I mean, it was almost like, in certain situations, defensive backs weren't even, you know, completely with backs turned, which, my God, if you're a defensive back and your back is completely turned to a mobile quarterback, then you deserve to have what happened to them a lot in the game. But I think the numbers tell the story itself. I, you know, responded to a tweet earlier on Twitter where I said 11 of 15 on third down. Well, they were 11 of 17, but still the point holds. You're giving them second chances 11 times in this game. Conversely, you were only able to convert 5 of 11 third downs. So that's not good for LSU. And the fact that they were still in this game, I think, probably tells you as well that Florida State was doing their best to try to bail them out. But in the end, they were able to hold on. They were able to win. So credit goes to Mike Norvell in that program, because let's be honest here, ever since Jimbo Fisher was the head coach at Florida State, they have not been playing and winning games like this. So that's huge for them. Number two for LSU, I think the biggest thing is the special teams blunders. I mean, you have Malik Nabers, who, credit to him, though, too, after he has the second muff punt, comes out there and is able to come down with at least one crucial catch on that drive that set them up for the chance to be able to tie the ball game and send it into overtime before the blocked extra point. But, you know, you have two muff punts. That hurts you. And then also, too, as well, you get the blocked field goal. That happens. The blocked extra point, where he came through the exact same gap that you just came through on the blocked field goal. So it was just a complete whiff, a complete missed assignment. And also, too, credit to Florida State for being able to see, hey, that could be an issue. That's how we can win this ball game and just a great jump by the defender, able to get through and get the paws on the football, and able to come away with the win in regulation. I think it's huge for Florida State just in terms of the confidence of the program moving forward. They needed this a lot more than LSU and Brian Kelly needed the win. It would have been nice for Brian Kelly to get the win, but I still think if you get the win, a 1-0 LSU team today is being talked about a lot the same way that I'm talking about them right now, of the mistakes that you made, and also, too, just the unorganized look that you had on the field and a perceived lack of preparation for this game. I think that that was also something else that LSU fans kind of looked at. And, you know, I was talking with somebody about this today. They brought up a great point. They said, I thought that was supposed to be Kelly's calling card. I thought that's why we got this guy in Baton Rouge now, was because his teams were always incredibly well prepared to play and were incredibly well disciplined. Because, like I said, I gave that moniker to the way that Notre Dame looked against Ohio State the other night. I said Marcus Freeman had this team ready to go. He had this team ready to play. That was not the case, because I do think that there probably was a little bit of a thought with LSU of seeing how Florida State played the week before in week zero against Duquesne, probably thinking, this team's nothing. We're going to take care of them. We've got them, which can happen. I mean, look, you're dealing with 18, 19, 20-year-old kids, but you were flat-footed. They were not. They brought the fight to you, and they won. And now I think the key for Florida State is going to be, because we've seen programs that have had a proud tradition and trying to find their footing again have wins like this. I mean, remember to open the season back in, I believe it was 2015, when Texas had the huge win at home against, it was actually the 2016 season. Now that I think about it, yeah, that's right, because in the following year, that was when Brian Kelly made coordinator hires and changes, and Notre Dame was able to be on the trajectory they've been for the last 5 years, as opposed to what they were that season, where I believe they finished 5-7, missing a bowl game. And people were wondering if Brian Kelly was going to be on his way out there at Notre Dame. He completely turned around the program and turned around the culture there and was able to get things on the right track. So, like I was saying about Texas, I mean, we've seen teams have wins like this. And then it's also, too, kind of a feeling of not necessarily knowing how to carry that momentum through the rest of the season. I think if Florida State does it the right way, they compartmentalize this and now hopefully can say to themselves, hey, we can win games like this. Like when we see Clemson on the other sideline, we don't need to be as worried about, you know, can we run with these guys? Can we play with these guys? Can we beat these guys? You know, when they see Pitt or anybody else in their conference is going to present a challenge to them this season. So I think if nothing else, it gives them confidence. You also saw a team who fought hard for their head coach, too, because I know a lot of people are, you know, talking about what's Mike Norvell's future there at Florida State. If they're able to have nights like they had last night, then I think that probably the Deion Sanders talk and all of the other things with Florida State, then that's going to be on the back burner. So remains to be seen. Georgia and Oregon, I mean, you know, just what can we say about that one other than just tremendous job by Kirby Smart? Because I think had Georgia come out there and, say, played a game like we saw Ohio State and Notre Dame play the other night, I think he probably would have had a lot of questions. But I think for the most part, it would have been, a lot of turnover, primarily on the defense, but some of it a little bit too on the offense. So that's to be expected. But Stetson Bennett, unbelievable in this game. 25 of 31, 368, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. So he's able to take control of the football. And Carson Beck able to get some playing time as well. He throws a touchdown pass himself, 5 of 6, 71 yards. So an outstanding day you were able to get Georgia to start the season off on a very strong foot. And the leading receiver in this game, did any of you have Kenny McIntosh being the leading receiver? If you did, then you were right to the tune of 9 catches, 117 yards. Ladd McConkey able to factor both in the passing and rushing game as well. A.D. Mitchell with not only some strong play on the field, a touchdown catch of his own, but also, too, making its rounds on social media right now, his manhandling of an Oregon defender to be able to spring Ladd McConkey to get in the end zone for that touchdown there to get things going in the first quarter for Georgia, as it was a little bit of a slow start. And then the second quarter, they took off. The third quarter, it was a lot of the same. And they were able to score 21 points in the second half. But I think the thing that needs to be talked about more than anything is the play of this defense. Is I think that one of the things we focus on all the time is if you've got returning starters, that means that automatically you're going to be even better the following year. Sometimes that's not even the case. And I think that going hand in hand with that is that sometimes youthful experience or inexperience can be a great thing for you, because these guys don't know any better to say, hey, I can't do it on this level, or hey, I can do this on this level. If anything, they're saying, watch me do this on this level. And I think you saw a lot of guys do that on Saturday. I mean, you saw Malachi Starks able to have a strong game. You saw, Jamon Dumas Pop Johnson able to have a nice little game himself. Kamari Lassiter able to do some great things out there. Smile Munden Jr., Nolan Smith. I mean, you know, the list goes on and on. I mean, you didn't sack Bo Nix in this game, but three tackles for a loss as a defense. You were able to turn them over at least a couple of times with a couple of interceptions by Bo Nix. And, just as a defense playing outstanding. I mean, this was a defense that held an experienced quarterback and an offense to just 313 total yards of offense in that game. And, also, too, able to, like I said, get those two turnovers, and you don't lose the turnover battle in this game, too. So you were plus two in that regard as well. So just an absolute strong start for Kirby Smart and for the Dogs. And it's a team now that I think a lot of people believe, with this one out of the way, it's kind of like what we saw last year, that, you know, you think, looking at the schedule, you say, this is a team that looks like they can go 12-0, at the very worst 11-1. But
the winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Tonight in Arkansas, there's a mother tucking in her daughter and turning off the light. A business owner is burning the midnight oil. An at-home dinner date is plating up possibility. And it's all happening under one roof. How? The power of a conversation, like the one John from Integrity Solutions had with First Horizon Bank about his vision for a sustainable mixed-use building. Now it's not just words, it's life. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/John. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
A team that wants to be in their way, I don't think there's any doubt about it, is the Florida Gators. And just what an outstanding job by Billy Napier. I mean, kind of what we talked about with Marcus Freeman. I'm going to say the same thing about Billy Napier. I mean, you know, who would have come away from this game on Saturday night saying, God, you know, just how could you lose to Utah at home? Utah was the favorite. Utah was the number 17 team, or was the number seven team in the country. Try saying that pretty fast. And a very good quarterback in Cameron Rising, and just a really good team that a lot of people wondered, could they win the Pac-12, and could they be able to be the Pac-12's crashing of the college football playoff party? But they've got a pretty steep hill to climb up now, as Florida able to get the 29-26 win. The passing number is not all that great for Anthony Richardson, 17-24, 168, but it was what he was able to do on the ground, carrying the ball 11 times, 106 yards, getting into the end zone three times. So he was huge for them to be able to win that game. And I understand, you know, it's a tough travel for Utah, go across the country and play in a very tough environment in terms of the conditions, because, I mean, what is Florida this time of year? What is Florida most times of year? Very hot, very humid. That can be pretty tough to play in, which on Thursday we'll talk about Alabama at Texas. And that's something with that noon game there in Austin. That's something that's going to be a challenge for Texas as well. But in this case right here, just an outstanding start by Anthony Richardson, and, you know, just the dual threat athletic abilities that he's got. That's tough to defend. I mean, like we talked about with Jordan Travis earlier for LSU, same deal with Anthony Richardson. I mean, he is somebody that if he's able to get out in the open field, watch out. He might make some things happen. So if you've got a very confident and a very effective dual threat option at quarterback, that's something that can be incredibly tough to defend. So Great job for Florida. Alabama, I don't think anybody had any doubts about what Nick Saban's team was going to be able to do in the very first game. Just a quick look at that one as the Crimson Tide able to get the win. And not only do you get Jaden Milroe in the game, you also are able to get Ty Simpson in the game as well to get a little bit of action there as Alabama from the beginning. I mean, 17 points in the first quarter. You finish it out with 24 points in the second quarter, and then it was on from there as the Crimson Tide able to win that one handedly after they were up 41-0 at the half, and you win it 55-0. Bryce Young, a pretty nice night from the touchdown perspective because he had five of them, 18 of 28, and then also to the running game for Bryce Young. Like we were just talking about with Anthony Richardson, Bryce Young able to make some great plays happen with his feet as he carried the ball five times, including that long 63-yard run and also to a touchdown of his own. Jahmyr Gibbs, nice little start for him. Nine carries, 93 yards as Jermaine Burton able to get a little bit more action, a couple of touchdown catches. I mean, I've talked about it numerous times. This is why Jermaine Burton's now at Alabama and he's no longer at Georgia. He wanted to be able to factor more into the offense. And obviously, Bill O'Brien and the Alabama coaching staff were able to make that happen for him. And he showed you that. I mean, you know, as long as catching the game was 12 yards, but still, in terms of being a red zone option and, you know, catching the football for scores, I mean, that's something that he was able to factor in and help out with. So five catches from him. So, you know, across the board, too, I mean, you had numerous different, I mean, let's count this up, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 different players catching footballs 27 times in that game for Alabama defensively. I mean, you know, it's a defense that a lot of people are looking to make some huge things happen this year. I mean, Will Anderson didn't get to the quarterback. He did hurry the quarterback once, but still five. He was the second leading tackler on the team. Five total tackles for him, three of them the solo variety, including one for a loss. And, you know, this was a team that kind of like we talked about with Georgia, not able to get to the quarterback yet, but they did pressure the quarterback in this game. Four quarterback hurries in that performance for Alabama. So great job by Nick Saban and his crew. Arkansas, what can be said about them? I mean, just a great job by Sam Pittman and his coaching staff as you got a Cincinnati team who is trying to find their footing after losing so many really good, impactful players to that team. But they were able to go into Arkansas and give them a battle. And if not for a late Arkansas touchdown there to be able to salt it away, as I put them up 31-17 at that point. But then you get Ben Bryant able to find Leonard Taylor for 15 yards and a touchdown for Cincinnati to be able to have a chance to possibly be able to win it. But again, I mean, KJ Jefferson, three touchdowns, did not turn the football over via interception as he was 18 to 26, 223 yards. Rocket Sanders, a lot of people, you know, has been hearing about all offseason from Arkansas media. Look out for Rocket Sanders. And he did not disappoint. 20 carries, 117 yards in his very first game. And then what do you get in terms of the receiving game? You get Trey Knox, the tight end, able to be a strong performer for them in the receiving game. Six catches, 75 yards, two touchdowns. Matt Landers able to factor as well with his familiarity with Sam Pittman from his time at Georgia. And then able to come over and get three catches. And then Jaden Hazelwood also as well. So both crucial transfers for this Arkansas team, able to factor in and able to help out get the win. Real quick here before we get you set up for the later in the week podcast, A&M able to hold off a Sam Houston State team, which if you watch that game, which I was able to watch a little bit of it before we had to head out, and also, too, before the weather delay that they had there in College Station. But Sam Houston State looked like an FBS football team, and that's an FCS team that when you turn on the football championship, subdivision, you know, championship playoffs, that you see that team in the running for the national championship every single year as they were able to come in, and they did not disappoint as they're held scoreless in this game. But still, I mean, holding A&M to 17 points in the first half, I think is pretty impressive. And then A&M able to have a couple of scores in the third and fourth quarter. They'd be able to take that one over and win it 31-0. But it doesn't get any easier this week because we just saw an Appalachian State team at home in Boone be able to give North Carolina a tough time, and that was just an absolute shootout until the end. North Carolina able to hold on and win, but now it is going to be a very good Appalachian State team coming in. And then the following week, too, a Miami team that's believing in what they have this season coming to your backyard in the third week of the season. So it's going to be a tough one these next couple of weeks. Then you get into the conference play. So if this A&M team is a 10-11 win team at the end of the season, well, number one, I think that A&M fans will be ecstatic if that's the case. But also, number two, they're going to have earned it because they don't have very many breaks outside of the SEC schedule. And then you get into that gauntlet that's the SEC West. And then you get, the crossover that you have in the conference with South Carolina, who I think a lot of people think is going to be an improved football team. So Jimbo Fisher, that team, like I said, they're going to have earned it at the end of the season if it is a very strong campaign. Mississippi State, after last year having a really tough performance at Memphis, able to come back and take out Memphis in their own backyard at Davis-Wade Stadium, 49-23. Will Rogers, if you're playing college football fantasy, then Will Rogers is probably a pick that you have. 38 of 49, 450 yards, 5 touchdowns, and an interception in that one. In year 3 of Mike Leach and his offenses, watch out when they're able to take over and have that continuity as a team, because it showed you. I mean, kind of like I was talking about with Alabama, I mean, you were able to have this Mississippi State team who was able to get about 11 or 12 different guys involved in their passing game as well. And, Rogers playing pretty much the entire game. And also, too, capable running attack for Mississippi State as well, as you were able to get Jaquavius Marks and also Johnson, other running back, Dylan Johnson for Mississippi State. Able to make some meaningful contributions. And then also to Ole Miss, able to get the season opening win after a lot of transfers that they have had into their program. They're able to take out Troy and Jackson Dart. I don't think it surprised very many people getting the start, as at least the completion percentage wise, he was pretty good. He was 18 of 27 and did have an interception, though, which is something we know that he's going to have, because we've heard that from Lane Kiffin as well, that he's a guy that has the propensity to turn the football over a little bit. So he did with an interception in this one. But still, I mean, when you have all the transfers, I mean, Zach Evans, no surprise, able to step in and play incredibly well, 20 carries, 130 yards. But, it's an Ole Miss team that with Lane Kiffin and that offense, that's not going to be an issue for them. I think that the question is going to be, are you able to replace a very capable defense from last year? While the numbers might not be eye-popping, still Chance Campbell and DJ Durkin and that defense was a huge bright spot for Ole Miss last year, and was a huge reason why they were playing in the Sugar Bowl against Baylor for a chance to win a New Year's Six Bowl game. That's something that, as the season goes along, is that going to be something that remains a capability for them, or is it going to be something that's going to involve a huge rebuilding effort? I think only time will tell. All right, coming up on Thursday's edition, episode 43 of the Southern Beat, we're going to get you in to Texas and Alabama, also get you set up for the rest of the weekend slate of games coming up in college football, which, I mean, it's going to be a kind of mixed bag, kind of like, what we saw last weekend where you had some top-tier games. But for the most part, though, it was a little left to be desired. Still, I mean, we're going to have that Texas and Alabama game. Look forward to Tennessee and Pittsburgh. That's nothing to not get too excited about, as we'll see those two teams play against each other. Houston and Texas Tech. How about, kind of going a little bit outside again? University of Houston playing a very good UTSA team. And a lot of people wondering if Dana Holgorsen and Clayton Tune and that team can be one of the group of five teams that it's able to break into the college football playoff this year. That's something that's going to be something to keep an eye out for, as well as Kentucky at Florida. As of right now, Florida is unranked, but I've got to believe that probably after this past weekend and the way that they played against Utah, I've got to believe they're probably going to break in through the AP and the coaches' polls. So that's something to keep an eye out for. So went a little longer than I thought I would, but still able to jump on with you guys and be able to talk a little bit of week one. I want to thank everybody that makes this show possible. And I want to thank you, the listener. Like and subscribe. Please do all those different types of things and take in the show wherever you get your podcast needs. That's Apple, Spotify, the Google Play Store, podcastpark.com with us here at Dickey Broadcasting Company. All of those different avenues, we appreciate it very much. So until next time, let's talk again right here, getting you ready for week two of college football later on this week. I'm Dan Matthews. This has been the Southern Beat.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
In today's fast-paced world, your business deserves banking solutions that are as dynamic and cost-effective as you are. Solutions like free business checking from LGE Community Credit Union, free online and mobile banking, no minimum balance required, plus no maintenance fees and dividends on your balance. At LGE, we're a smarter way to bank. See what's possible for your business at lgeccu.org. No monthly maintenance fees. Other service fees such as NSF, overdraft, wire, and stop payment fees still apply. Not all businesses will qualify. Membership eligibility and base savings account that keeps a $5 minimum balance required.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.